My name is Melissa, and I'm an alcoholic. My sobriety date is January 10th, 2009. My home group is the Four Horsemen. We meet Monday nights at 7. It's a big book study. You should come out. And I have a sponsor, and I get to sponsor women in service position. I'm the treasurer for the home group, and I actually get to go out to the juvenile detention center the second and the fourth Thursday of the month, which is really cool if I talk about that part of my story. So I'm going to share, you know, what it used to be like, what happened, and what it's like today. And sometimes, because I get so nervous getting up here, you know, I'm already prayed up, and I get myself here physically, so I got to have that faith, right? Even though the future is undetermined, that God will carry me through this experience, you know, from hopeless to hopeful. And so, you know, what my life looks like today, you know, I have a big God in my life. I have a lot of wonderful relationships. I have a healthy and loving marriage. I have a dog that loves me unconditionally. You know, I'm placed back into my profession. I'm employed. You know, I have a car, a valid driver's license, car insurance, and health insurance. And I didn't have any of that before I came into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. So it does, it is a lot better. And I'm grateful to be here. So what it used to be like, so I grew up in an alcoholic home. I'm the oldest of three, so, you know, when you grow up in an alcoholic home, there's a lot of chaos. You know, there was a lot of hurt, there was a lot of fights, you know, the police were always showing up. You know, my dad died an alcoholic, so he died at 54. He spent the last years of his life in a nursing home as a wet brain, you know, and I always feel sad, like, when it talks about men, you know, we're like men who lost their legs, they never grew new ones. Like, towards the end, he got an infection in his leg, they cut his leg off, and then when they cut the other leg off, like, he died shortly after. So, you know, like, this disease can take us out fast, but it also can take us out really slow, and it's really hard to watch, you know, if there's not a solution. So my mom, you know, she was a drug addict, and so she did the best that she could, and so she ended up dying of kidney failure because her little body gave out, you know, and so she's not here. And I'm, like I said, I'm the oldest of three, so I have a sister that's 2 years younger than me, and she just OD'd in May, and so she has two kids, one's 18, and then the other one just turned, you know, she's 8, but the great thing about Alcoholics Anonymous is that I can be there, you know, not like, oh, I feel sad for these kids, and then that's it, like, I can be there, you know, I can call, I can, like, plan adventures and show up, remind them that, you know, their mama loved them more than anything in the whole world, you know, and my brother, you know, I pray for him all the time, and I know that he has a God just like I do, but, you know, he's on probation, and his phone number always changes, you know, but I just always want him to know that I love him, whether or not he's drinking or not drinking, you know, because you never know how things work out. So, like I said, grew up in an alcoholic home. It was really awful, you know, and I'm not going to sit here and talk about all these bad things that happened with my parents, because that's the one thing that changes, you know, when people you love die from this disease, like, all that anger goes away, right? And then there's just, like, this sadness, that, what is it? Anger is just sadness's bodyguard. But so we all got split up. I was 12. My sister was 10. My brother was little. He was like 5. We all got split up. My brother went to go live with a grandpa. My sister went to live with an aunt. And I got placed in the custody of the state. So I got placed on CHINS, Child in Need of Supervision. And then I started drinking. Like, my mom and me, like, we were buds. She was one of 14 kids. So, like, on my mom's side, like, there was always kind of mayhem going around. So, I mean, she was a lot of fun. And I love her and I miss her, you know, but yeah, so I did a lot of partying with my mom. And so when I started getting in trouble, I got taken out of the house, got put in child needs supervision. I got placed in a group home. But then when I started getting in trouble with the law, right, I got tons of like minor in possession of alcohol, minor under the influence, interference with a police officer. I got a ton of those. And so when I'm in a group home, it's unsafe for the rest of the kids for me to go back home. So I had to go to juvie. So like I went to juvie a lot, you know. I got kicked out of high school. They put me in an alternative school, and I ended up just dropping out my second semester of my senior year. But then I got arrested shortly after and actually sat in juvie until I turned 18. I think the longest stint I did in juvie was about 9 months, but that's the great thing about service work, right? So like I get to go out to the juvenile detention center, and I know these kids are like, I don't have a problem with drinking, you know, and I really just want to make sure to share the message that if one day that they find that they do, you know, that Alcoholics Anonymous is a safe place to come. So it's a really cool to do that service position. So let's see. So I'm drinking, I'm partying, I'm getting in a lot of trouble with the law. Like I said, tons of interference with the police officer tickets. I remember one time, you know, and it's funny, like I said, I dropped out of high school. Whenever, like, I think about, like, that fight or flight, like, the sympathetic, parasympathetic nervous system, like, I always think about those moments, like, when either the car gets pulled over or like the house gets raided, like, okay, am I going to run or am I going to get arrested? You know, like that's what I think, fight or flight, like, you know, that moment, like, you're like, what am I going to do? So, cause I took off tons of times and then, you know, there'd be like lights and going over fields. But I remember one time I was with a buddy and, you know, we were drinking and he had some outside issues on him. And so we got pulled over and he was like, I'm going to run. So he did. He just took off. And I remember I was underage and I was so wasted. And I remember like I had these chocolate donuts and I was just like eating them because I was thinking that it was going to like get the smell of alcohol off my breath. But then like, you know, there was tons of like more police officers and there was dogs. And I was like, but I just wonder what that mugshot would look like. You know what I mean? Like, cause I just had like chocolate, but nobody knew it was chocolate. And I was really, really drunk. But, you know, no one messed with me. But there was a lot of moments like that. Just a lot of craziness. A lot of times getting arrested. Like I said, when I got out of jail, I'd like to say, you know, juvie. I actually thought, because the judge had given me, like, I think it was, like, 279 days in jail, all suspended, but, like, just maybe a month. The clause was my mom had to come get me, you know, and so she was in North Carolina. She didn't come. So I had a huge resentment when I was younger, but, you know, through the step work, I was able to work through that. I just thought on my birthday that I was going to get, just switched over to the adult block. But then, like, the bailiff came down and he just gave me this piece of paper saying that I was released from the custody of the state. And I was like, what does this mean? What I think this means, you know, and I would have thought that I would have done better, you know, but I didn't. I was just doing the same stuff that I was doing before. You know, I wasn't working. I was looking for the next party. You know, whenever everyone talks about tequila, I remember like when I was like in my early, like, you know, 18, 19, 20s, I wasn't working. Like we would have bonfires out in the field and I would just drink so much tequila. Like multiple times I would wake up and like come to and I wouldn't have my top on, no shoes. I mean, I don't ever really like the shoes, but you think that would be enough to scare me, but you know, it didn't. I remember I was out west for a while, which was weird too, because I'm from North Carolina. My dad was in the Coast Guard, but we got stationed in Gillette, Wyoming when we all got split up. So when I think I was like 19 years old, I went out to Sturgis bike rally. I always think like, I can't believe I didn't get more tattoos that week that I was out there. You know, like now it's like you go places, like you pack for it, right? Like, so you pack like a change of clothes, toothbrush, you know, but no, I just had a little top on and I had made a skirt out of like colored saran wrap and I was out there for over a week. So I don't know. I don't know. A lot of times, like I didn't know. And you know, with the step work, I remember when I did my very first four step, like thinking, like, I really didn't know, but I know that God discloses things to me as I'm able to handle them. Because like sometimes like I'll be like, oh yeah, like I totally forgot things that happened. And it's usually when I'm in a meeting and somebody shares something and I'm like, oh, oh yeah, I'm going to write that down and talk to my sponsor about that. but like I said, I'm getting in a lot of trouble with the law. I, you know, like in Bill's story, he talks about like there were periods of sobriety, but gradually things get worse. So that was a lot of my story. You know, I had moved back to North Carolina because I thought I wanted to be closer to my family. And I got my GED and I got accepted in the dental hygiene program. So again, this is kind of God doing for me what I couldn't do for myself. And I say there were like periods of sobriety. There really wasn't, but you know, because I was still drinking. I was still partying, but I was able to make it to school. And I can really identify how they talk about like the Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde, because, you know, behind closed doors for me, like it was really scary. Like I was doing a lot of really harmful things to myself, but like to school, like, you know, no one would know that. Like I remember I started training for, it was like, I think it was a half marathon mud run with a girl that I was going to school with. And so we trained hard for this race. So like the alcoholic that I am, the night before the race, I just party all night long. I'm like, man, I better get to bed. She's coming here like 5 a.m, you know, and then, you know, the whole don't go to bed and the sun comes up and you're like, ugh. And so, yeah, I still ran that race. But I remember like I came to at the, like wherever. And then I was in the ambulance. I had IVs in my arm. And I remember like, I guess I was telling like the EMT was like, what did you drink or what did you do? And I was saying like vodka. But my friend was like, no, she wouldn't do that. You know, I was like, but that's the thing. Like I have to be honest today because sometimes, you know, I never judge people, you know, cause you never know what's going on and you never know what people walk through. So I guess that's the gift of, you know, walking through some of this stuff. And one thing that I love about Alcoholics Anonymous is that, you know, the suffering that, you know, we have to endure, it doesn't go for nothing. You know what I mean? We use all that pain and then we use it to help other people. So, you know, I ended up graduating from high school, you know, at the community college. And I graduated, they voted me, I got the Heart Award, which I always say too, that I always had the heart, you know, I feel like that was always there, but just like the total inability to be able to follow through with anything, you know, like, oh my gosh, that's huge for me in my recovery, like accountability. Like if I say that I'm going to do it, I need to do it. Cause I was big on, yeah, sure. Okay. I'm in, let's go. And I mean, just be gone weeks later, you know, it's super important. So yeah, they voted me, I got the Heart Award and Classmate of the Year. So, I mean, you never know. And then, you know, about that time, my mom got diagnosed with kidney failure. And so I had moved from Jacksonville, North Carolina to Raleigh. And so I moved, okay, I graduated from hygiene school in 2005. My sobriety date is 09. So it did not take me long to like totally demolition derby my life. You know, I got out there. I thought at first like I was going to restore this relationship with my mama and be helpful since she was sick. But like our relationship was so toxic, you know, like we just all we knew to do was just to party, you know. And so my job was important to me. You know, I got to be a dental hygienist. And so, and not like, you know, in the program, we're taught to be humble, you know, and it wasn't like an ego thing, but like, I didn't come from anywhere, you know what I mean? So it wasn't like I was sitting there at the kitchen table with my parents discussing what college I was going to go to, you know, like I didn't even graduate from high school. So the fact that I could, you know, get through hygiene school was really proud of that. But what happened with my drinking is that, you know, I started practicing impaired is what I was doing. You know, at first it would be like, you know, I would party all night. Well, I've got to go to bed because I got to work in the morning. And then it would be the whole, you know, the sun's coming up. What am I going to do? Like, am I going to like call out or am I going to no show? Well, you can't do that. You know, like we talk a lot about the ripple effect and how it can be positive today, but like, just think how negatively I affected a lot of people's lives. So if they come to get their teeth clean, you know, like my whole patients, all of them plan to go there. Or what did I do to the team? You know what I mean? When I just no show or call out at the last minute, you know, it was totally disrespectful to everyone in the office and all the patients. But I remember being so drunk sometimes, like I would be driving to work and like, you know how you're so, ugh, like, ugh, you know how, you know, when you're just so drunk and you're like, nodding out. Like, I nodded out a lot, right? Like, that was awful. And I remember, like, nodding out, and I'm like, oh, my gosh. So I got, like, all the windows rolled down on the Beltline. I got the music blaring because I'm, like, trying to just, like, wake up. I remember I was driving in, you know, like, the little flippers, like, the little da-da-da-da-da, you know, if, like, you run into them. So I'm like, I don't know what time it was. It was 5 or something in the morning. I'm like, you're going to work, impaired, you know, and so then I was like, da-da-da-da, and I'm like, oh, yeah. And then, like, the car behind me, I remember, was like, but they're probably like, what is this girl doing? But on my way to work. And so, you know, just a lot of, you know, insanity started to happen. You know, it talks about in our literature, like, that you get to a place where you can't differentiate between the truth and the false, you know, and that was my life. First of all, I don't know if I mentioned this, but me being an alcoholic, I was a big liar, so I lied all the time. I lied about things I probably didn't even need to lie about, but just where I was going, who I was doing things with, and yeah, so it's super important to tell the truth, spiritual principle number one, honesty. but, so, you know, things got really, really bad. You know, I remember, shoot, you know, for example, it was St. Patrick's Day. I always reflect on that, too, so I've been arrested a lot of holidays, like 2 Super Bowl Sundays, 1 St. Patrick's Day, so like in every time there was a holiday, I'm like, yeah, because I haven't been arrested since I've been sober. I mean, I went to court a couple times, but, like, the judge was kind to me, you know, kinder in recovery than, like, pre-recovery. Not always so kind there. But, yeah, so it's St. Patrick's Day, and I had been partying all night, and I was a cheer sponsor, you know, for a bunch of little girls. You know, they're, like, my niece's age. They're, like, I think between 8 and 10 years old, and it was a parade. So my job was to, like, be on border control and keep them hydrated. So I had, like, a water bottle, but I was so drunk. Like, I was just squirting them everywhere, you know, like, probably in the eye, in the ear, you know. And so I got through that somehow with children, you know, like, people – You just never know. And so then after that, then, you know, we're downtown, and so I'm with my aunt, so we go to a pub, and we're drinking liquor. I have a seizure. I'm starting to have seizures, too, as a direct result of my drinking. So if anyone's had seizures, those are super scary. You know, like, we're talking about, like, if I hit my head, there was going to be blood on the floor. So that's how my seizures would be. Like, when I came to, I'd always be on the floor, and it would either be blood because I whacked my head and my hair would be soaked, or my hair would be soaked because I kind of drooled out, you know. So, but seizures are scary because it's like when you first kind of come to, it's like you don't know things, you don't remember them, like you don't remember your name or where you are, but it comes back, but it takes a couple minutes, but it's still super scary. You think that would be enough to scare me sober, but I never looked at it. Like, when I was drinking, I was just like on, you know. I often kid because I know in recovery that in the present moment, be here now, that's where God is, right? And if I'm feeling guilty or shameful or anxious, I'm not here now. And it's hard. I mean, I try to be here now, and I remind myself, I'm grateful to know that tool, but, like, when I was drinking, I was really good at being in the moment, you know? Like, I never even thought of, I was really good at it then. I don't know why I flip-flopped. I wish it was the other way around, but that's all right. At least I'm aware to be here now, like, keep my head and my feet in the same spot. But yeah, so I'm drinking with my aunt, St. Patrick's Day. I have a seizure in the pub. That doesn't scare me. I kind of come to. Then I'm drinking some more. And then my aunt's trying to get outside issues from a friend. He's like an uncle, you know, that was staying in an Oxford house. And they were like, oh, you know, let me, well, my roommate is, you know, Melissa's age, so how about, you know, I'll bring him and, you know, they can hook up. And then my aunt's given, you know, this guy that we just met that's living in an Oxford house $200 to take me to a hotel to get me over my ex, who is currently with my sister. Like, crazy. But that was my life. Like, that's one day. But my life was always like that, like, all the time, you know. And it's like drama times 100, you know. I don't have any drama in my life today. None. I mean, that's awesome. You know, and then when you start telling the truth, it's like, you know where you were. It's just better, you know. Like I said, I was practicing impaired. You know, I had those moments of shame. I remember one time, you know, I got to that place of the obsession to want to drink alcohol is, like, growing, 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 right? So, like, I'm already to the point where, you know, I heard someone share one time that when they drink alcohol, it makes them thirsty. And so I can relate to that. You know, it's just like, I just the obsession of the mind was super strong, you know, and that's all I could think about. You know, I got to a place where, you know, I lost a lot of jobs because of my drinking a lot. I started working for a temporary placement agency, which is an awesome job for a practicing alcoholic because I can work if I want to. And then they give me cash at the end of the day. I got into tons of trouble with the IRS, you know, but I made that right with my amends with the financial. But yeah, when you get 299, you're supposed to take a percentage out for taxes. Well, I'm drinking alcohol, so there was no savings account. I don't know. I think I was like, I don't know, maybe like 6 or 7 years sober when I got my very first savings account, which was cool. Another blessing of sobriety. But yeah. So I'm drinking. That's all, you know, I'm just drinking and it's like an obsession and I'm just, my whole world is just around drinking. How am I going to get it? Make sure I don't run out. You know what I mean? And I just started to rush through my days if I was even able to make it somewhere to work. But I remember I got to a place where I couldn't even make it past lunch. So at lunch I had to drink. Right. And I needed to make it to the end of the day, but I couldn't, right? And so I was drinking at lunch, and then my 2 o'clock was a little boy, right? So he was probably like 5 years old. I remember his dad came back with him, and nobody said anything, but like my hands, you know, like I got to the place too where like my hands were so shaky. So I was like trying to like clean his teeth, but my hands were so shaky, and you know I smelled like alcohol. But I was just super sick and I didn't have a solution, you know, like, and it just, all I knew, you know, I'm not here to blame my parents because they died from untreated alcoholism and addiction. And it's super sad, but like, there was no solution, you know, like there just wasn't a solution. So I just continued to drink. You know, to fast forward, you know, I got in a lot more trouble with the law, a lot more embarrassing moments. You know, I like that saying, when I drink alcohol, like moral judgment, self-respect, like none of that matters, right? All that matters is, you know, me getting wasted. So I remember I had gotten a job and I'm like, I'm going to do better. You know, like I got a new job. Let's straighten up, tighten up. But, you know, and he was a periodontist and he was really cool. He was like, he said, cause I'm kind of hyper and this is 10 years into sobriety, right? So this is 10 years sober. I often kid that's why I drank the way I did. It kind of like took me down a little bit. Now I watch the caffeine, I meditate, I exercise, all that stuff. But, I remember when he hired me, he said like he liked me for me and I had never, and I wasn't sober, but like I never heard that. Like usually always, like that was on my first 4-step, you know, like Melissa, take it down a notch, or you know what I mean? I just, man, I hate that. But obviously maybe I should put it on there again. yeah, so I was like, I gotta do better. And then, you know, I'm still drinking, practicing impaired, and an investigator shows up at my work, right? It's been reported that you're practicing impaired. So you think that would be enough to straighten me up because my job is important to me. Like, it really was. Like, I was really proud of that. That was probably the only thing that I was proud of. But, you know, the investigator had came and he was like, you know, it was reported that you're practicing impaired. And I had like went to bed the night before. So I was like, no, you know, cause I'm a liar when I'm, and so I'm like, no. He's like, well, can you think of anybody who would just think that, you know, that you're practicing impaired? I was like, no, I don't know why anyone would do that, you know? And so like, and then he left. So that would have been enough to have scared probably some people enough to be sober. But I mean, it was just, I mean, probably that night I drank, you know, and then within a month's time, I had lost that job, you know, I had lost my professional license to practice, right? So I wasn't fit to take care of the public. It's true, I wasn't. So, you know, I was in an apartment. I was so sick, y'all. I was having like a lot of seizures. I was super paranoid. Like I always kid that, you know, shadow people are not your friends. towards the end, I had like blankets over the windows. If I even could make it outside, like I was just so sick. Like I would literally take the bills out of my mailbox and I would put it in a purple book bag. Like I have just taken care of them.
like, that's how crazy I was. Like, I was super, super crazy. They say even in early recovery, like, it can take up a year sometimes just, like, to mentally, like, remember things, do, like, normal tasks. So it's important that we're patient with ourselves. But, yeah, so, like, I'm having a lot of violent seizures, and it's kind of significant because, the people, right? Yeah. So I'm not afraid of peoples today, but I had to put something over my people because I was just super paranoid. I was super sick. And, so it said, you know, courage does not always roar. Sometimes courage is a quiet voice at the end of the day saying, I will try again tomorrow. So that's kind of where I was. I didn't want to be living this way, but I didn't have the solution, you know? And so I was having more seizures. The one seizure that I had, it was like my moment of clarity. I had paralysis on the left side of my body. All in all, it was probably just a couple minutes, but it was enough to really scare me because of my dad, you know? And, so I had called an uncle, which is, you know, God doing for me what I couldn't do for myself, because this uncle I probably hadn't talked to in like 5 years. So, you know, I called him and I told him that I was sick and that I needed help. And so I'm in Raleigh, North Carolina. He's in Jacksonville, North Carolina. So he drove, like, and see, I'm being disrespectful again, right? Like, I'm just calling someone up and I'm just ruining their whole day. But he drove from Jacksonville, North Carolina to Raleigh, picked me up, saw my condition. Like, I was so sick. Like, I was like, I had muscle spasms and I was like just kicking. And, you know, even if I did probably pass out, my legs were probably still, like, I didn't even could keep covers on the bed until, like, I was almost a year sober. So, you know, but then, so when he saw my condition, you know, he took me to the hospital. I don't know how many fluids they put in me, but it was an expensive bill that I had made right, you know, over the years. But yeah, so they saw me. They were like, geez, a great treatment. So, you know, I don't know about you guys, but when I hit my bottom, I had no money and there was no health insurance. So, but Walter B. Jones took me. So, you know, there are facilities that take you when you don't have anything, because a lot of times we don't have very much towards the end, you know? And, I remember it took me a couple weeks to just kind of like detox off of everything that I had in me. And I remember the doctor would come in there. I always say that too. Like, when you're honest with the doctors about the seizures, just be prepared to sleep on the floor, you know, because they want you high up. But it was a lot like jail, really, you know, just because like the little cement, like, or the gray, like, hard mats and everything was cement. But, you know, I would just kind of come in net a consciousness, really. And he'd be like, he would come in and he'd say, how you feel today? You know, I just want you to remember how you feel. And so after I completed the program, it was a 30-day program at Walter B. Jones, I had gotten out for like a day, and I was at my aunt and uncle's house, the one that I had called. And then I got in contact, well, a lady had gotten in contact with me about having lost my professional license. And so they have a program set up for healthcare professionals that if you lose your professional license, maybe in time, you know, being drug tested and, you know, doing a whole bunch of stuff, that they have like a curriculum that maybe you can have your license back one day. And so I signed a contract with them. And usually it's a 5-year contract, but like mine was indefinite, which is a big word for an alcoholic, right? It's kind of like, oh, thank you. And so they did not think that Walter B. Jones was like an accredited program. So they wanted me to go to Hope Valley, which is in like Mayberry, North Carolina. And so I remember reflection is a beautiful tool in recovery, because I was so mad. Like, I was like, you know, because I had to go to another treatment center, and I didn't know. I'm all new to this recovery stuff, but I'm like, I didn't relapse. Like, why would I have to go to another treatment center? But yeah, I was only out for like a day, and then I went to Hope Valley. But this again was God doing for me what I couldn't do for myself. So Hope Valley is like kind of out in the middle of nowhere, and it was just women, you know, and so they had like two health ladies, and always say they're like angels. Thank you. I'm thirsty. But when I went to Hope Valley, they gave me a big book of Alcoholics Anonymous.
you know, and they told me that there was a set of spiritual principles, you know, that I never had to drink again one day at a time. And so, you know, I was kind of like, you know, Walter B had its place because I had to just kind of like detox from everything. But then when I was there, I was able to kind of like hear things, right? Like open my heart a little bit. And then they had, you know, they had like step work. And then we were just kind of doing like 1, 2, 3. And then they had a lot of Father Martin Chalk Talks. And so they just had us like, you know, listening to a lot of those. But I always, they're wonderful ladies. I always contact them once a year and just let them know that I'm still doing okay. You know, a cool little side story is my aunt, the one, you know, the uncle that picked me up, I guess she had a friend whose daughter was like really, really sick. And so the friend knew, was friends with my Aunt Susan, that knew that she had a niece that was sick and that she got better. And so she had contacted her. And so she was like, "Where did you go?" And so the girl went to Hope Valley, and she actually went to the halfway house too that I went to, and she's currently still there and she's doing good for today, which is really cool, you know, because you never know. But after I graduated for the 30-day program at Hope Valley, it was suggested I need more time. I don't know if you guys heard that in early recovery. Like, I hated hearing that. Oh, you just need more time. Time takes time. And so I literally was like expedited from Hope Valley to a women's halfway house in Southern Pines, North Carolina. I was angry about that because I was like, oh, what about all my stuff? Like, I want to go and get my stuff, like my clothes. And not that I could wear any of the clothes at the halfway house that I was wearing before I got sober, anywho. Just donate all those. But, yeah, so I went to the halfway house, and I learned a lot of cool things there, right? One thing is it gave me a safe place to sleep, right? So, like, I still do the gratitude list, and I always tell the girls I sponsor to do that too. Not only does it like help me trade my negative thinking into positive, but like I have one, I was only like, I think I was like 70 days sober, and I just had put that, you know, I was grateful that I had a safe place to sleep, you know, and that I was making friends with women, and that I was starting to pray. So, you know, that's what we would do. We would have, you know, we'd have to be, it was a strict halfway house too, y'all. Like, not that I had a driver's license, so that's probably why I couldn't drive, you know, but, so, like, around in the van again, just same stuff was happening to me when I was in juvie, you know, the white van, everyone knew, and I wasn't allowed to have a cell phone either, but here we go. It's a repeat. But, you know, like I said, I got acclimated to Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, I got a home group. They had me be the greeter. So I got a service position in the home group. You know, I got a sponsor. I got to work the 12 steps with her, you know, and just have wonderful, you know, I always say too, like, I learned how to be a lady, right? So, like, I got to wear, you know, shorts that were longer than my panties. You know, the women in Alcoholics Anonymous taught me how to do that. I didn't know. And then the house manager, because they're like, no, I had to do all my shopping at the Walmart, and it had to be like thick shoulders, and it had to be past the fingertips. Just like relearned everything. And that's the truth, because I didn't have any life skills when I came in. Everything that I know, like, I learned from Alcoholics Anonymous and the people in Alcoholics Anonymous. So I'm forever grateful, you know. One thing too, like a little side story. You know, I had a lot of roommates that didn't make it. I ended up staying a year at that halfway house. And, you know, a lot of girls, it just, the awareness of this disease and how it just, more people go than stay. And, but the one roommate that I ended up having towards the end that stayed the longest, she's my best friend, right? And so I can tell you, like, I never had a best friend. I just didn't. I didn't. And so when she came in there, her brother had committed suicide, you know, and so, like, she was going through that 10 years ago. And so the day that my sister died, I was up in the area, and I was speaking at a men's treatment center the same day that she died. So most nights, like, I will be at home with my husband. But, like, the night that I found out that my sister died, I was at the halfway house with her because she's staff now. So that's kind of what she does. And so, like, I felt like that was God. So God wanted me to be with her because, you know, she walked through it too, you know, and the women who were in the halfway house, if they were mamas, then maybe, you know what I mean? Maybe they would stay. Maybe they would stay. So I thought that was God, you know. But yeah, and my best friend, she has a daughter and I'm her godmother. So that's really cool. She's the same age as my little niece. So graduated, I spent a year at the Bethany house. And, so then I moved in with that uncle that I called, right? And so this is God doing for me what I couldn't do for myself, because I was in a lot of debt, y'all. Like, I think it was like $55,000 worth of debt, right? Because I was just buying booze with my paychecks. And then I was getting all these credit cards when I started being a hygienist. I mean, it was just crazy. And so, but you know what? I've paid all my debt off, like with my amends, through the step work. And it took me years to do. Like, it took me, I think maybe almost 7 years to pay all my debt off. And I remember, this is God, because my God is humorous God. Like, we joke around all the time. Sarcasm is definitely coping skill for sure. But like, you know, when I started out with the small ones, when I was making my amends, so like the phone bill, the electric bill, the gas bill, and then I would just kind of work my way up to the big, like, credit cards. But I remember I had gotten all my debt paid off, and so my uncle was like, well, we need to start having a savings account, you know, like, you're already used to paying this money. And I remember I had started my very first little savings account, and then this is why it's important that we stick with each other, right? This is important, like, then with, like, I mean, normal people have a place in our lives too, but, like, I had got a letter from the North Carolina State, like, revenue, and it said I got sober in 09, that I had done my taxes wrong in 08, and so I owed, like, I don't know, it was like $1,600 or something, but I had just that in my savings account, like, just like maybe just a little bit shy of that. And so I'm all upset, you know, I'm like, because, you know, I had made all, I mean, it took me years to pay off all my debt. And then my uncle, well, he was like, he goes, well, do you have any paperwork? And I was like, paperwork? Oh, I don't even remember that year, like, at all. I was like, no, I don't have any paperwork. But it was cool that I had that amount and I was able to pay them, because that's what we do, we make it right. But yeah, so when I moved out of the Bethany house and I moved in with my aunt and uncle, I had to sign, I forget things, but I had to sign a contract to live in their house, because that's how big of a troublemaker I was. And my trust, it doesn't come from my words, it comes from time, like me consistently doing the next right thing for that trust to be there. But yeah, so like I had to sign a contract to go to the Bethany house, and then when I moved in with my uncle, that was an opportunity for me to work on my recovery and then just work so I could pay off all that debt, which I was able to get a big chunk of it since I didn't have the rent to have to pay, so I'm grateful. But yeah, I had to sign a contract before I moved in with them. And I wasn't allowed to date boys. Like, so I'm an adult, right? But like the Bethany house, it was like, no boys. That was not my primary purpose, you know. And then when I moved, even with my aunt and uncle, it was like, no boys. It was like recovery, work. And if I felt like I was to a place where I needed to start dating, then I could move out. So, you know, but like my sponsor would always tell me, you know, wait until I get to a place where, you know, a man will compliment my life instead of fix, because it took me years. What is it? There's a long period of reconstruction ahead. That is so true. But it's good. It feels really good when you clean it up, you know? And so, yeah, so I was able to live there for a little while. And then my recovery started to grow, right? So, you know, working with others started happening, which was really, really cool. You know, like, there's a lot of, like, first in recovery, you know, like, how about, like, the first time, you know, someone asks you if you'll be their sponsor, which you're always afraid you're going to mess it up, you know, but there's that saying that, you know, if the person is ready, you know, you can't say anything wrong, and if they're not, then you can't say anything right. But, you know, like, getting on your knees and doing the third step, you know, or if they trust you, you know, with their fifth step, or when you get to the lineage part where you get to be, like, a grand sponsor, you know, it's, like, really good stuff. It's good stuff. And so I had moved into an apartment, you know, I'm
living life one day at a time. You know, I'm, with my profession. So, like, yeah, I got my professional license back after some time, you know, and so I got a lot of drug tests. I used to kid because, like, every single morning I would, like, call. I had to put in, I would call this number and then put in my social security number, and it would say, like, you are selected or you are not selected. And then I would need to that day go and provide, you know, your analysis. But this is my fault. This is consequences of my actions, and this is proof that I'm doing the right thing. And so, yeah, because so when I'm young and I'm in a juvie, like, and you're on juvenile probation, like, they give you drug tests, like, the state pays for it, but you pay for it. It's $100 every time. But you know what? That's consequences of my actions. But yeah, I used to kid because I get to go to conferences once a year, which is really cool because it recharges my spirituality. But like, you know, being a healthcare professional, you have to have like so many hours of continuing education. But since I got in trouble with my professional license, I have 18 additional hours that I've got to do that are focused with substance abuse. But it's really neat because I get to hear doctors lecture. And there's a Dr. Elam, he does a toxicology where all the drug tests go. And I kidded one time with him. I was like, you know, I said, sometimes I think about you before I think about my higher power. Because I would wake up, I call a number, and you know, I'm like, oh, got that done, because it was super important. But yeah, over time, you know, I was able to, they trusted me in order to practice and take care of the public, which is really, really cool. And so, like, today, I'm licensed in 3 states to be able to practice dental hygiene. You know, if you had Googled my name in 2009, and then if you Google it now, like, it does shine recovery. Like, it's really cool. I got married in recovery. So that's important, right? Like, so for me, no, I always am funny, like, talking about this because I don't want, like, any woman to be in the room thinking that they have to have that in order to be, like, healthy and whole, because that is not the case. Like, I was in a really good place in my sobriety. You know, I had my own place. I was self-supporting. I was working, and I got the opportunity to work with others, and it just, I got to a place where, you know, I met, you know, my husband, and, you know, when I was little, you know, that was some old ideas I had to let go of, right? Like, I was never going to get married. I wasn't going to be anybody's property, you know? And so I had to let go of that old idea. And the blessing when I got to live with my aunt and uncle, you know, to pay off my debt, like, I got to see what a healthy marriage looks like. I didn't know, you know? And so, like, God was using them so I could get to a place where I could be a good wife, you know? And so, he's a wonderful husband. God is good to me, you know? He poured me a marriage prayer every single day. You know, him and the dog, they'll meet me at the car when I come home. Like, it's a good life, you know. It's so good. I'm grateful. And so, let's see. So, yep, I'm able to practice dental hygiene. And you know, I'm gonna walk through the steps because that's how I could get well, you know, and it's not like I just work the steps and I'm done. Like, it's a transformation, right? Like, it's a design for living, and it's just woven into my life, you know? And so with step one, you know, I like in the literature how it talks about, like, under the lash of alcoholism or beaten into submission, because that's what had to happen for me, right? I need to understand the seriousness of my condition, right? 100%, no reservations, I'm an alcoholic, right? So bodily and mentally. And, you know, that's a beautiful thing. I don't have the obsession of the mind to want to drink today, you know? Like, even if, like, you guys didn't hear anything else, like, I don't want to drink all the time. And that's really cool because I didn't think that could happen. You know, step two, came to believe. A couple of things, like, do I believe this program can work for me? Yes, you know, because I can see it working in you guys, you know. And so, you know, the spiritual principle of that is hope. And so that's, like, my favorite words in the program are sunlight of the spirit. So that's my higher power. You know, I believe in God, but sunlight of the spirit is my higher power. And so believe, like, for me, it was actually, it's a personal relationship that I get to work on, right? I didn't fight it, you know. I'll tell you, I didn't have a relationship with God before I came into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. I had, even in my sickest, darkest days, I never thought to ask God for help. That's how self-centered I was, you know, like, I just never, I never even did a drunk's prayer. So, you know, when I'm, you know, taught in Alcoholics Anonymous to pray, you know, I did, you know, because I was desperate for something, you know, some kind of solution. And so I prayed. You guys told me to pray. I prayed. You know, in the beginning, it was just like a prayer in the morning. Please get me through the day, you know, without drinking. And then at the end of the day, well, thank you for getting me through the day without drinking. But now it's just like, it's like a start with God, stay with God, end with God, you know, all day long, you know. Step three is the faith, right? And so I developed that through experience. So I'm super afraid. Like, I'm afraid of everything. And so the difference in recovery is, so me, prior to recovery, like, I would have been like, I'm out. You know, I'm going to go the other way, you know, than whatever it is that I'm afraid of. And so in recovery, I'm taught to pray and then walk through the experience. And then I have that experience that I can share with others. I like that, you know, faith isn't a feeling, it's a decision that I'm going to trust God despite not knowing what the outcome is going to be, you know, or like the God box, I got turned on to that in the halfway house. And so when I work with others, you know, I'll get them a God box, and it's really cool because sometimes when they have children, like even like the little kids will kind of do it too. Like they'll, you know, pray, they'll write something down, and then they'll put it in the God box to give it to God. It helps me when I'm stuck on something because, I mean, in early recovery, I filled up a whole box with one person's name because I have obsessive thinking, right? Not only about the drink, but just in general. And so, like, sometimes it's hard to let things go. There was this prayer that I really, really loved about step three that I learned in the halfway house. And it was saying broken toys or broken dreams, I think. It says, as children bring their broken toys for us to mend, I brought my broken dreams to God because he was my friend. But then instead of leaving him in peace to work alone, I hung around and tried to help with ways that were my own. At last I snatched them back and cried, you know, how could you be so slow? My child, what could I do? You never did let go. So sometimes, you know, like, sometimes I get stuck too, like, with the childhood stuff, which is so silly because it says everywhere in our literature to be, you know, dishonest, self-seeking, and self-pity. It's a lot in there. So, like, I'm not alone. Like, so, don't be feeling sorry for myself. It says right in there, God, don't know self-pity. But I love that prayer. It really helped me, you know, like, because I don't like to feel that way. Obviously, I'm alcoholic. I don't like to feel uncomfortable. So I drank the way I did. But step four, you know, made a searching fearless inventory. Now, I know I trust the process today, so I know that it works. But when I first came to that step, I was like, oh my goodness. You know, I'm like, what? It was awful because I'm like, that's why I drink, because all this stuff. And you want me to write it down, be sober in early recovery in the halfway house with a whole bunch of girls in early recovery? But yeah, you know, I was just taught to pray and then write down people, place, and things that I was upset with. And I did that. I actually had to work on it in the morning. I couldn't work on it at night because I would have really bad dreams, nightmares. But I did it. And then when I did my first fifth step with my sponsor, like, God was everywhere, right? So my sponsor had a lot of animals, you know? And so I just remember there were, like, dogs and cats. And, like, they knew that I was hurting and I was sad. And they were just, like, all over, you know? But I will say, shortly after I did my first fifth step, that was when the desire, I don't know, like, what day it was, but the desire to want to drink all the time went away. Because it was still strong for me in early recovery. It didn't just go away. Like, I thought about it all the time, you know? And so after I had done that, the obsession to want to drink, it went away. And so that's really cool. I didn't think that was possible. You know, so step six and seven, transformation is another word that I always think about with the step work, because my understanding is always changing. It's just like the more I need to experience it more than understand it. You know, I'm like, it's like the more I learn, the more I don't know. But I'm okay with that. Like, I love, like, that kindergarten spirituality. Like, I love that. You know, I don't always have to know the answers or I have to figure it out. I could just experience it. You know, I remember hating myself in early recovery, but, like, I was just following directions, you know. So God in the beginning was kind of that too, like the good orderly directions. Like, I trusted my sponsor, like, she was telling me what to do. I was, like, just doing it. And so I did the, how it talks about in our literature, that hole in the donut. I remember feeling that in early sobriety. Like, I hated myself, but, like,
I still was feeling lost, you know, like, well, I don't know what you guys want me to be, you know, but like what I know today is that it's just a total surrender, right? Like with the 7-step prayer, like you have all of me, like good and bad, right? And I just try to go through the day and not cause harm. You know, step 8, you know, make the list. Now that's funny because, you know, a lot of those names come from the 4-step, which my sponsor had to point out to me because that's not where I pulled the names from, you know, but it's that's how we heal. And you know, with amends, like I love the 9-step promises. Like in early recovery, like I couldn't hear a lot. Like I was super sick and like I didn't retain anything. But like I remember liking it when people read the 9-step promises. But they seemed like imaginary. You know what I mean? Like they weren't real, you know, but they are, you know, all of those promises have come true in my life, but one, you know, and I love like with the amends, I like to think of it as like a piece of cloth, like it's torn, you know, and you can mend it and it'll be what it'll be, but it won't be what it was. And what was always important to me when I make an amends is it's God's timing, right? It's not mine. It's not theirs. I need to remember to pray. I need to talk to my sponsor to make sure I'm on the beam and I'm making amends for what I need to be making for amends. And then I need to just listen, you know, I'm sorry for what can I do to make it right? And then listen and be ready to do that. One of really cool amends that happened was that periodontist I worked for. This is recovery. So, you know, the investigator is like in his practice because of me. He ended up having to fire me. And I think it was like maybe 3 years or so in recovery. I met with him, I had lunch, and I made my amends. And I told him that I was sorry for putting him, you know, his employees and his patients in danger because of my drinking. And he was like, well, I'm glad that you're doing well today. Well, he called like 2 years ago to see if I was in the Raleigh area because he needed a full-time hygienist, you know? So that's really cool, you know? Or like the amends with my dad, right? So I used to be so angry because, you know, it just made him who God didn't want him to be, you know? But towards the end, when I was able to make that amends, you know, he was in the nursing home and he couldn't really get words out, but like, you know, when we did that amends, like he cried, I cried, and we had that moment of healing. But I think I needed that too before I could be married. You know, like those are core issues. You know, they say with abandonment, you know, you either become an abandoner yourself or like a people pleaser. But your fundamentals, it's deep, you know. I always try to think, like I read some literature about, you know, not to live in my head space, but to live in my heart space and to hold everyone else there too. You know, step 10, being in the day, right? So that's my staying in the day. So I need to go through the day and watch for, you know, being dishonest, self-seeking, selfishness. If I hurt anybody, right? Because through the step work, I was able to clean up all my mess. Well, step 10's there so I don't make more mess, which I do because I'm human, but that's okay. The tick, 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 tick in my head, like I'm able to look at things and say if I've harmed anyone, you know what I mean? And say that I'm sorry. You know, I don't have to just run through people, but it just helps me be in the day, be in the moment, be there with God. Step 11, which I love, you know, the prayer of St. Francis. When we got married, my very first sponsor, she came and she read the prayer of St. Francis at our ceremony, which was really cool. You know, like prayer, talking to God, meditation, listening. Well, you know, there's a lot of things about meditation, but in our big book, right, like it has specific directions for us, you know, like upon awakening, you know, I ask God, you know, to direct my thinking and then just look at the 24 hours ahead. That's so I can do that because like recovery has given me a really big, full, wonderful life, you know, and sometimes it can be just life gets overwhelming sometimes, but like I can wake up and I can talk to God and I can think about the 24 hours ahead. Like that's it, you know, and then I just stay with him. So like they say, sometimes you can just be like throughout the day, just like thy will be done, thy will be done, thy will be done. The sponsor that I have now, because every time I've moved, I've got a new sponsor only because that works for me. I need to have someone that can see me. You know, I can't have long distance. That's my thing, but she always talks about the next right stitch, you know, and so it's just whatever's right in front of me. You know, step
12, you know, like I've talked about, like, you know, the spiritual awakening, there's three parts there. Like, how about the fact that when I come to, you know, I'm waking up, I'm not coming to, and my first thought isn't about drinking, right? Like, it's a shift in perception that I wake up and I think to talk about God and I ask to be useful and helpful. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, Alcoholics Anonymous taught me to do that, you know, carrying the message. Like I said, that's like the most wonderful relationships in the whole world. It's like imprints on the heart, like when you get a chance to sponsor women, and you know what I mean, like what you walk through with your sponsor, and then practicing these principles in all our affairs. Like, so there's God's will, right? So throughout the recovery journey, it's like, well, I have no idea what God's will is for me. I know what it's not, and so I let our spiritual principles guide me, you know. My sponsor that I have now, she's always talking about the circle and the triangle, right? I need to be right in the middle because I'm safe there, you know, recovery, unity, service. And so I'm just grateful to be here. Thank you for listening to me for an hour talk.